From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Megan Mack. We open this week's podcast with some news that shook Western New York this week. Congresswoman Louise Lauder died early Friday at the age of 88. She was hospitalized for a concussion after falling in her home in Washington last week. Slaughter was serving her 16th term in Congress, and she was planning on running for a 17th term in November. We devoted our entire 2 hours of Connections on Friday to discussing Representative Slaughter's life and her legacy, and we heard from a number of political leaders and community members. You can find the whole conversation on our website. But the clip we've decided to share with you here is one of the more emotional calls that we received during the show. And there was a lot of emotion during those 2 hours. This call is from a man named Pat. He's the leader of the Parenton Democratic Committee. And here he is sharing his memories of Congresswoman Slaughter.
I think one thing that Louise would want us to remember is out Louise's back kitchen window, she could see a grove of trees known as Hart's Woods. And that was a group of trees that were native species to the area that she saw were under plans to be developed. And that was really the beginning of her activism in our community. And I think she would really want people to remember that activism doesn't begin by running for Congress. It begins by looking out your front door and your back door and being aware of what's happening in your neighborhood and in your community. And that's really where people like she and Irene Gosin and other giants from the late 60s and early 70s began, just by being aware of what was happening in their community, in our community in Fairport. And our hearts are broken by her passing. But we learned an immense amount by just being with her. And every time I drive down South Main Street at her house, I'll be looking at her kitchen window, remembering all that she did for us.
Pat, I hear the emotion in your voice, and I'm really grateful for your phone call. If you feel like you're up for it, I'd love to ask you one quick follow-up question.
Sure.
You are describing something that is not glamorous. And here's a tweet from a woman named Ginny who says, "This seems tiny and pre-Congress, but her activism in saving Hart's Woods in Fairport has been inspirational to me and left a beautiful legacy in our neighborhood." And I'm glad you called with that story, because sometimes what we look for in political leaders are big ticket projects, the kinds of things where their name is going to be on it, massive infrastructure, stadiums and things like that. But for the most part, doing the work of government is kind of drudgery. It's hard, and it requires a willingness to meet on issues that might seem hyperlocal, esoteric, and to really listen. And not everybody wants to do that. So I want, if you could, for you to share with our listeners, what it was like having a member of Congress who is willing to do that when not everyone does that.
Yeah, I mean, activism is not about the glamorous things. It's not about cocktail parties and fundraisers and events like that. It's about the things that we're dealing with in Parenton now, like the noxious odors coming from our area landfill and the battle that is happening with everyday people who just want things that prevent them from enjoying their everyday life to stop, or people who are looking for work to have an easier time doing it. And that's what Louise was famous for. I mean, there are person after person in our community that have encountered Louise in Wegmans, the Parenton Wegmans, where she shopped. Or, coming back from a trip from Washington, being able to ride with her and coach. It was not glamorous, and it was not a glamorous life. It was about ordinary people doing ordinary things. And she inspired a whole new generation. I mean, really, she's the mother and grandmother of the modern political committees that we have, whether it's in the city or in Parenton, that inspire us to look at the everyday issues that there are and just look at them from a critical eye. What's wrong with this picture? Why is this happening? How can this community be better? And I think she brought out those better angels of ourselves. And I think that's really what politics is. I mean, it gets a bad rap for a lot of different reasons, and some of it is it's very hard work. When we were fielding candidates last year for town offices, we just basically were very honest with people about what the work was of campaigning, and it was meeting your neighbors and asking them how things are going. It was that simple. And it wasn't about the glamorous. It was about the everyday. It was about, you know, the little kid who was pulling on their mom or dad's coat because they needed attention, or their ability, their need to head off to a grocery store, or raking leaves in the front yard and stopping to have a conversation with a candidate. That really is what public service is. And it's the ability for those who have the privilege of holding elective office to take time to listen and to fight for those who are in a tight spot.
Next, another woman who served as a source of inspiration for generations of women. Recy Taylor was an African-American woman in Alabama whose name, if you didn't know it before, you may have heard mentioned by Oprah at the Golden Globes. Recy Taylor was kidnapped and gang raped by six white men in 1944. And even though some of those men confessed to the crime, Recy Taylor never saw justice. The NAACP sent Rosa Parks to investigate Taylor's case, and her case helped spark the civil rights movement. A documentary on Taylor's story will be screened at the Little Theater on March 23rd, and we previewed it on the talk show this week. Taylor received an apology from the Alabama legislature in 2011, and an Alabama historian, not a professional one, by the way, said that that apology was issued to calm both sides of the case down. Now, that sparked a discussion on the show about how Black women are so often and unjustly portrayed as angry. In this clip, the co-organizers of the film screening share their thoughts on that subject. First, you'll hear Erica Wilson and then Moet James. You'll also hear from Kevin Hicks from the Rochester Association of Black Journalists and Allison O'Malley from Resolve, which helps victims of domestic violence. But make sure you stick around through the end of this clip because you'll also hear from Recy Taylor's cousin. Her name is Tracy, and she called the show to tell us more about who Recy Taylor was. But first, here's Erica Wilson.
Every day I try not to come off as an angry Black woman, and I have no reason to be angry because I understand that it's just something that we have to deal with. People not understanding who we are or what it is that we face, and that the things that our ancestors have gone through still affects us today. And a lot of people don't understand that, and a lot of white people don't understand that. And I just say that to say that we're going to use Black Cinema Series as another way to educate people. Not a lot of Black people are, you know, aware of the true history of what it is that white people go through, and white people aren't really aware of what it is that Black people have gone through and are going through.
It's so interesting that you brought up the quote-unquote angry Black woman, because for as long as I can remember, my mother has always said to me, Moet, you have two strikes against you. You are Black and you are a woman. So not only do you have to work twice as hard, you have to work three times as hard. You have to watch what you say. You have to watch how you act. You have to watch how you react to what someone else has said to you. Mm-hmm. So then every day as a Black woman, you have to think, how am I going to step into the situation? Mm-hmm. And what do I expect out of the situation? You have to second guess every step that you make and every decision that you make and anything that comes out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's hard.
And that's as a woman in her mid-20s in 2018. And I mean, Recy was in her 20s, you know, back in the 40s and had to deal with this, had to deal with, you know, the
segregation, had to deal with oppression.
Like I said, I do think that it's just a lot of educating need to go on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think also, Evan and I were the two guys in the room. One of the things that I think both of us can also appreciate is this whole movement to educate men. If you look at over on Gregg Street and South Clinton, there's a big billboard that's out up there now about sexual harassment. And basically, I can't remember the whole script, but it's like the guy saying something like, I saw her standing there, and you think that it may be going, you know, toward the negative, but then he says something like, and then I walked over and told the guys that were harassing her, leave her alone. Now, I don't know who put the billboard up, but it catches your attention. It's placed in a prominent place. And I think Allie can also talk about, you know, if we're talking about rape in general, about some of the rape myths that are out there that still pervade society now, you know, from everywhere, everything from, well, she was dressed that way, you know. So maybe Allie can talk about that.
This film has a number of very interesting conversations around men, and I'm grateful that one of our stand-up guys will be on the panel that night to talk about it.
Jack, thank you.
Yeah, Jack Brennick. Mm-hmm. And thinking about what's happening in the world today and how do we engage men and partner with men, you know, the vast majority of men don't support the notion that rape or sexual assault or harassment is okay. I hear a lot from men saying, all right, why am I now all of a sudden the bad guy? Because I don't support this and I want to be part of the solution. And how do I do it? Men also need to know how to act. It's not okay for a guy to say, just listen. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for men to accept that that's all they need to do right now. So we want to equip men with tools. We want to give them ways to have conversations and learn how to listen to the women in their life, because the women in their life will give them cues. They will give them information on how to respond and what we need from them.
Let me get a couple of phone calls here. This is Tracy in Rochester. Go ahead, Tracy.
I just want to say thank you for bringing light to my family member's situation, Ms. Reese Taylor. But I want to say also that you would not be having the conversation right now without the efforts of her brother, Mr. Mm-hmm. Robert Corbett, who for more than 60 years asked for a simple apology. Mm-hmm. The family never wanted money. We never asked for money. The only thing he did on her behalf was ask for an apology. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to state that today. And that for the older members of my family who are still experiencing trauma, my mother, her grandchildren, and other relatives who still live in Abbeville, it's a very traumatic situation. It's not one that we talk about. It's not attention that we seek. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to acknowledge Mr. Robert Corbett's efforts in bringing light to Ms. Reese's story. Miss Reese was not angry. She was not bitter. We could not make the funeral to Abbeville, but she lived a full life. She was a loving woman, and the situation happened to her, but she did not let that define her. And Mr. Mm-hmm. Robert sent an obituary to me from the funeral, and the only thing that was touched on about what happened was just a simple photo of Miss Parks. And that was it. It was no mention of what happened to her mm-hmm. or anything. It just talked about her life, the things that she enjoyed, mm-hmm. and that's it. So just know she lived a full life.
Next, for the first time since 1991, there will be a national military parade. NPR reports that President Trump ordered the parade for November on Veterans Day. It will include period uniforms and an extensive aerial display. The president wants to be surrounded by military heroes in a receiving booth at the end of the parade. All told, the cost could be anywhere between $3 and $50 million. Now, veterans are split on whether this is a good idea. In this clip, you'll hear from Dominic Anise, a Vietnam War veteran. Then you'll hear from Medal of Honor recipient Gary Bykirk.
I just sense that it is political. I think that if we want to honor our veterans, and again, I think a lot of us who served want to be quiet about that, or I do. Let me say that. I like to be quiet about my service and keep it to myself. But I do think that it is the wrong approach, and I think it sends a wrong message at this point in time.
Here's a note from Krista, who says, as a nurse, a mom, a combat veteran, sister of a Green Beret, and a wife of a cop and a veteran, we brag by doing our jobs and serving others. We don't need a parade. Quiet professionals as a special forces ethos. More should follow it. Is that kind of what you're saying about kind
exactly.
of doing it quietly?
Exactly. It's tough when I'm sitting next to a Medal of Honor recipient because I honor the service that those guys have provided, but I still do not feel that this is, I'm against the parade.
Gary, how do you feel about it?
Well, as a Special Forces soldier, I can identify with
Krista,
the lady Krista had said, as being quiet professionals. I've always felt that way, too. But I also come from that Vietnam era where we came back, and quiet would have been nice. It would have been nice
it
to be
quiet. It wasn't quiet at the time,
it was it? It was not quiet. And like many that came back from that time, I had received not so much a welcome home at all. Since that time, I've been encouraged to see the way that the veterans and those who've returned from Iraq, Afghanistan, Desert Storm, the Gulf War, the way that this country has welcomed them back and treated them. And that has really given me a tremendous feeling of forgiveness, of respect, of gratitude, and a sense of pride for the service. It's hard to remain quiet when so many others are not quiet and outright disrespectful. I just finished reading The 12 Strong, a book about the Green Berets that went in and liberated Afghanistan, particularly Mazar-e Sharif. And they were talking about the reception they got when they came into that city. And people were, just 12 of them, and these people were cheering and just running up just to be able to touch them. And as I read that, I identified with them, and I thought about what it must have felt like for them to be able to receive that. And so for me, to be able to have something that is done with taste for the veterans, I'm all for it. If it can be done with taste, and it's too late to keep the politics out of it, but many times those of us who fought for all these years to gain some recognition have realized you got to swallow politics and take it and just hope for the best. So I'm excited to see it happen, and I look forward to being able to see the results that it might have on this country.
Next, we talked about the stigma of mental illness. Two NBA stars, DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Love, spoke out about their own battles with mental health challenges. That sparked thousands of responses from fans who said they were encouraged to talk about their own mental health issues for the first time. In this clip, you'll hear a caller named Tracy. Then you'll hear Melanie Funches from the Mental Health Association of Rochester.
I'm really glad to get to be on your program. I'm going to read something because my mouth is like chalk, and I have anxiety when I speak.
Okay, no problem.
I'm a 70-year-old successful woman, a previous nurse midwife, and a master's degree in addiction counseling. I've just accepted the diagnosis of bipolar 1 after years of depression, inherited from my mom who committed suicide because drugs weren't available back then. I've tried all kinds of meds. Sometimes they worked, but I always tried to get off them because of the stigma. Finally, I'm on the proper mixture of meds, and I'm becoming able to function better in this crazy world. I just want to advocate for medication and psychiatric care and encourage people to work on getting over feeling stigmatized because we are accepted. I feel accepted now.
Tracy, thank you. Can I ask you, are you comfortable with me asking you a follow-up question?
Yeah, I think so.
You feel, you said, quote, we are accepted now. And I'm curious to know when that shift in feeling occurred for you and why, if you're able to sort of figure out why that has changed.
Well, it's changed just recently because of more attention to mental illness and more counselors and people who work with people with mental illness coming out and saying, you know, this is a chemical brain disorder. It's a disease, and we need to treat it. And if we don't pay attention to mental illness in our society, things are going to get worse and worse.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for calling this program and sharing that story, and I'm really honored you did that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Melanie Funches, does that give us more reason? That's just one person's story. And for every Tracy, there may be others who feel like they're not quite ready to share it, or they still struggle with stigma. We know stigma is still a problem. It's not over yet. But does that story at least give us some hope that we are moving a little on this?
I would like to hope so. But as with any movement, you take steps forward, you take steps back. You take steps forward, you take steps back. But as long as we are making a progressive movement toward understanding that we're all going through something at some point in time and that we all are in need of support. And the thing I want to point out is that there are many, many different ways that people receive support. For some people, talk therapy and medication works. For some people, it's medication without the therapy. For some people, it's group things. For some people, they've taken, you know, they see naturopaths, and other people do, you know, yoga, meditation, mindfulness. The key that I want people to understand is that if you feel this, it's okay to say something, because there is a plethora, I mean, like a whole shopping mall full of stuff that approaches to being well. But you can't. My mother used to say, closed mouth doesn't get fed. You know, if you don't say something, we don't know how to support you. And it's okay to say something. And that's the one thing, if you don't get anything else out of my time being here, that it's okay. And I want people to know that you're not alone and that all of us go through something and it's okay to say something about it.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can listen to Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM. We're also on the WXXI mobile app. Speaking on behalf of Evan Dawson, I'm Megan Mack. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.